Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. Welcome to the Sunday morning brunch. A lot of interesting stuff to jump into just to get you fixed, ready for this doggone sport week to take off. Like I said, we got a lot of things to jump into from MLB popping off. We got 1 week completed from the opening day. We also got NBA playoff situations going down. Got a little bit of boxing to get into Sports City. So I hope you people are ready to get a lot of this food for thought. All of you guys can do these dishes. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the towel, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Welcome to the Sunday morning brunch, people.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chance with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this, everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts. That's a fact, yeah.
The caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chef. And like I said, I'm going from boxing to MLB to NBA. Got a little football, too. They made Pouncey, well, one of the Pouncey brothers, rich at the center position. So I want to see how y'all feel about all these dishes that I got scooped up today. But let's get into it, man. Like I said, I got the kitchen wide open. We got the people here now that are supposed to be here calling in by way of the state of California. Brian Hughes, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
What is going on, TP? Fantastic morning. It's good to talk to you. Ready to go. Let's get it started.
Okay, and secondly, we got Arizona up and ready, calling in. We got Nacho, a.k.a. Mr. Silver. How are you feeling this morning after brunch?
You know, waking up, getting that sleep out of my eyes, feeling good, though. How y'all doing?
Doing all right. I wanted to jump into this thing quickly before we got going, and I kind of wanted to feed Nacho on this situation. Last night, Lamont Peterson and Danny Garcia had a fight out here on the East Coast here in Brooklyn, and Danny Garcia ended up winning the fight. However, Peterson put on an impressive show, didn't get too rattled by Garcia. However, Garcia looked like the beaten one in the fight. However, Garcia actually outscored Peterson in the match. Your thoughts are on from what you've seen or heard about the bout here in Brooklyn?
Now, with any other sport, there's this thing that fans like to do. They go to the stats and they go to the highlights and they look at that and they can determine how they feel about how their team played or whatever. In boxing, you can't do that. In boxing, you can't just go to the stats and the punches and go look at the highlights and see, you know, 2 minutes of one boxer just laying it into another one. You have to watch round to round each fight. And I was unable to watch every single round to get a full example of what the fight was like. From what I've seen, what I've read from pundits and fans alike is, you know, Garcia totally robbed Peterson. From what I've seen in the first four full rounds that I've watched so far, it does not seem to be running to me, which a lot of people who are on the side of Garcia say that Peterson was running most of the fight. The word gets used a lot, running a lot, when you're talking about the sweet science here. And I don't think it was running. It's the avoidance of getting hit. Floyd is really great at that. So I just really think that, in essence, this was just, and I hate to get political, this is just Al Haymon. He needs an undefeated fighter. Danny Garcia is that undefeated fighter. And I hate to go political with this, and I hate to go non-boxing, but that's just plain and simple in what it is. Al Haymon kind of runs this sport. If you don't know, get familiar with that name. And if you're not a great boxing fan, get really familiar with that name. Al Haymon's going to be the name that you're going to be synonymous with boxing for the next years to come. And if outcomes you don't want to hear, outcomes you don't agree with, Al Haymon's going to be the reason why. And I'm sorry I'm getting real political and not too of the boxing mind and what's going on in the, inside the ring. But this screams and has nothing more to do than political. He needs a zero. He needs a fighter with a zero because in September, that other fighter, Floyd, will be done. Whether he, you know, is undefeated or not, he'll be done fighting. And Al needs another undefeated fighter. And that's all this has come down to. It's sad because Lamont Peterson is one of the better fighters. And this is a fight that I've been wanting to see for a long time. And what happened, what seemed to have happened in that fight is what I know and what I thought would happen. Lamont Peterson wiping the floor with Danny Garcia. He's just a better fighter, in my opinion. But I just don't think that we were going to get a fair fight from the beginning just because Al Haymon. And like I said, I'm sorry I went all political on you guys, but there's no other way to put it. Lamont Peterson was robbed yesterday. And if you want to go back and watch the fight and watch it again, I strongly encourage you because the only way this stops is when fans say this is enough and we need to let these owners and or let Al Haymon and let these people know that this is enough of this and we want officiating done correctly and we want no outside interference.
I totally agree with you, and I'm not gonna lie, Sports City, I'm a Garcia fan. I'm a Garcia fan. I actually speak to him on a personal level. Nothing real heavy, like I call him every day or something, but I speak to him. So it's like I'm actually rooting for Garcia in the fight. And in the first couple of rounds, I agree with Nacho that you had a situation where Peterson didn't want to get hit. Because I guess he was staying away from that knockout punch because the last time we seen Peterson in a big bout, he got knocked out. So I think he was staying away from it. And the one thing that actually stops good boxers or speed is the jab. And he was working that jab so fine on Garcia. And that's the one thing that I think can be a blueprint to the falter of Danny Garcia. Him just trying to reach back and throw a bomb every time he could try and land a punch, which he was connecting on some, but a lot of it was getting blocked by, you know, his guard and his forearm shield to play, even though he's working Peterson's body. But Peterson actually worked Garcia pretty well, and it showed pretty much on Garcia's face. But still, yeah, you know, I do agree with Nacho to some extent that they try to keep some of these boxers' resume clean so they can still keep setting up big-time title fights for some of these guys. But I want to see how this progresses and also how Garcia, at the end of the fight, noted that he wanted to give Peterson another shot at another specific time in his career, but not now. So talk about that.
And real quick, you made a quick mention about Garcia's face, and that is a good point to bring up. But there is a fight last year. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. If you're not a boxing fan, you just want to watch boxing. It is Provodnikov versus Algieri. And at the beginning of that fight, Algieri takes a vicious left hook, and his eye is swollen shut from round one to round 12. And he puts on a display of boxing prowess I've almost never seen in a long time in this one particular match. And the way he dominated that fight afterwards, the face, looking at his face after that fight, you would never have thought he won. So in some instances, I do agree with you. You can look at the face and say, you know, he might not have won. In this instance, this is the case. You know, I was bringing up that as a point as, you know, sometimes somebody can get beat up but still win the fight. And I believe that, you know, Algieri did win that fight. But last night, that's one of those cases where you can just see it in Garcia's face. You can see it when they announced he won. You can just see it. He knew he did not win. He knew he did not give his – whether he felt like he gave his all or whatever, he knew he did not deserve to get that W last night. And you can see it in the face in victory. And you can tell when a victor knows he's won.
Right. And I agree with you. The way that the 12th round ended, you know how people put their hands up like they want to get the crowd involvement? Garcia looked like he was ready to break down because it looked like he lost his first fight. So He was saved. He was saved, if you will. The Chris Algieri situation, I like him. I respect him. He's from the New York area, but the way Pacquiao walked him down his last fight, I don't know. But that was a
different level of skills. I was talking about Algerian providing a cup skill level is adequately comparable than Pacquiao Algieri. I was talking about that specific fight and how you could look after a fight and still win, not necessarily their talent level. But, yeah, you're right. He walked him down.
I know. I'm not picking on Chris Amahar. He was unbeaten. And the way Pacquiao took care of that, it was literally like, wow, I don't know if he should have held that title of being unbeaten if he was fighting Punk or what. But you know, this is a little touch Sports City. Me and Nacho got something going on. We got a new show coming, so this is boxing at its best in the kitchen. So y'all get ready for these gloves in the kitchen for real. Brian, I want to see
Real quick, and we talk about the fights last night. If you didn't catch every fight, the fight before the Peterson fight, the Peter Quillen, Andy Lee fight, I'm not giving too much away. It was a draw, but that was a fight. That was a boxing match. If you want to see a good boxing match, check that one out.
Yes, I agree. And I'm an Andy Lee fan as well. But Ian actually turned it on and knocked us down twice to turn the tide on Lee. And that ended up being a draw. Hopefully they can get that rematch to go down and see if we can really get a victor out of that fight. That's going to be pretty major. But Sports City, stick tight. I'm already giving y'all good dishes. We about 10 minutes into this show, and this is what me and Nacho are on to. Look, I feel like I got a good pot brewing. I'm going to let that stay on the heat for a couple until y'all get ready to see what we about to do in the kitchen. Mr. Hughes, I don't know if you actually caught the fight or heard about the Garcia situation or how he feel like. To me, I think he felt like he let himself down on his undefeated run, but he did end up prevailing, and I guess more or less, like Nacho mentioned, winning the judges over throughout the duration of the fight. Do you agree with Nacho about the politics of the sport, and your thoughts on what you may have seen or heard about this fight?
Well, I do agree with Nacho that there is major politics involved in boxing. There's a reason why it's taken 8 years to get Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather in the same ring together, and they're still not there yet. I know we have a date, but I'm just saying this is the reason why, is because the promoters, the businessmen, that are involved in the sport. I did not get to catch this fight, guys. Luckily, during the first half of the show, while you guys were talking to it, I was able to go out and get some breakfast and watch all 12 rounds. So I was able to catch up. I'm just kidding with you guys. But, you know, everything that I heard about the fight, I actually talked to a friend that watched the fight. And once again, I don't want to pass off you know, his opinions as mine, because I did not see the fight. But basically, he said that Garcia was being bullied the second half of the fight. He's got major stamina question marks. When you start talking about fighting championship caliber fighters, you know, he's always kind of a bull in the ring, and I know you guys understand that, but basically that Peterson was hunting him down, was tracking him down the last few rounds. And this other person that I talked to basically told me that he thinks if the fight would have went two more rounds, that he might have been able to dispatch Garcia, that Garcia mentally was broken. He was frustrated. And the most comical thing, you know, once again, this guy's undefeated. He's 30-plus fights. I don't want to make light of the situation, but to me the most comical part of this whole thing was after the fight, he was asked, hey, do you want to fight Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather? And he immediately said, no, I want to fight this guy again, because he knows, just like Peterson knows, just like everybody else knows, he didn't really win that fight, number one. And number two, if he got his ass handed to him like that against Peterson, no disrespect to Peterson, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather would absolutely annihilate this kid. There's a big jump from number three, number four contender to the guy. I think if anything, guys, and once again, I'm not as big of a boxing aficionado as you guys are. I'm more of an MMA guy, so I'll defer to you guys on this. But I think if anything, I think this fight actually hurt Garcia's image. I think he needs to improve his stamina. I think he's kind of shown himself to be a one-trick pony. I think that, you know, when he gets in there with somebody who can really box, who can formulate a game plan and carry it out, I think he might be in trouble. You know, and you can only move up so far in boxing, as you guys know, on just raw talent and skill. Eventually, you're going to learn to have to fight smart. And that's where I think he's at. You know, is he going, if he wants to be the guy, if he wants to be somebody that people are going to look back 20 years from now and say, man, what a hell of a fighter that Garcia kid was. He needs to reinvent himself, and people do it all the time. Bernard Hopkins, he's done it a couple times. You cannot be the same guy you were at 19, 20 years old as you are at 24, as you will be at 35. And I think that that's where he's at. He's still the I throw punches from every angle kind of guy. He's still the I have knockout power in both hands kind of guy. But once again, Ty, you correct me if I'm wrong. I still don't think he spends a lot of time on his defensive skills. I still don't feel he's spending a lot of time on stamina drills and things like that, because everything that I've heard, that the second half of the fight, he got blown out the building. That basically that was gift wrapped to him based off of what he had done in the first five rounds.
I totally agree with you. On a lot of the situation that you throw out there. But the one thing that I do give Garcia credit in is his defense is okay. It's okay. I don't want to say it's great or good. I say it's okay. Now,
I don't normally cut in, but, you know, especially about boxing. But he's number three in the world, right? It got to be a lot better than okay.
Right. No. But this is, I'm trying to get there. Let me get there, and I can put this dish out to you. This is why I say it's okay. He moves well laterally, left to right, right? Like while boxers are throwing punches at him. And just like you said, he has great strength in both of his hands when he's throwing that hook. So he's waiting to counter off of you missing. He loves to throw that left-hand hook. It's something about – he kind of reminds me – Felix Tito Trinidad. I don't know if y'all remember Trinidad, but Trinidad was one of those guys that loaded up on that left hook, waited for you to miss and knock you out. And the one thing about Garcia, he could do it right or left. So if you aim into him, you know, and have him switch to his left hand, he'll try to throw that right hook and nail you, or the left hand. And he tried to do it several times to Peterson. Some of them landed, but it was like on the side of his face, not like on the button on the chin where you're looking to knock this guy out. And Peterson actually attacked well. And I agree with you, Brian, wholeheartedly. The first half of the fight, it was more or less Garcia sending the pressure to him when he's actually walking to Peterson and bringing the fight to him. Just like you said, when his gas ran out of that tank, Peterson was walking Garcia down. And it was to the point where this is the one thing that I love about boxing, but I don't like to watch it if it's somebody I love in the sport of boxing. Just because I don't like people that I love to watch box lose, you know what I'm saying? But fighting off of your heels, when you fight off of your heels, you are going to get knocked out or you're going to get tattooed because you're swinging out of desperation. You're not fighting with that intensity on your toes and trying to keep them off you. It was more or less he was trying to throw that hook off the back of his heels, and Peterson was actually throwing that jab right in the midst of it and catching him. So if Peterson would have actually loaded up and thrown a hook or uppercut to catch Garcia, that would have been a mean situation that everybody would have probably been out of their seat in Brooklyn and waiting to see how this would have went down. But Garcia survived the storm. I do agree with you, Brian. I don't know if he's – well, Floyd only has one fight left after this Pacquiao fight, which takes place in a few weeks, May 2nd. So in September, I want to see who Floyd ends up. That's if Floyd actually ends up taking care of business up against Pacquiao, but that's a whole other beast in this situation. But I think I think Floyd will more or less fight Amir Khan if he gets through with Pacquiao and wins that fight. If he loses that fight, then it'll be a rematch. Well, that's in the clause for Floyd. So I want to see how that goes down. But literally, I don't know who Garcia ends up fighting next. Because he already took care of Amir Khan, and Pacquiao would be the next fight in the division. So that'll be interesting. And the crazy part about Garcia's father is actually called Pacquiao out and said Pacquiao is not a killer. So I think they actually think they can beat Pacquiao, too, even though he you know, had a questionable fight just last night. It'll be interesting to see where Garcia does go next, especially outside of the week of the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight coming up.
In order for me to respect Garcia, he needs to have two fights prior to fighting anyone else. He needs to fight Mauricio Herrera again. He needs to fight Peterson again. He fights those two fighters back-to-back for me and wins again, but not the way he beat those two the last time, I'll be okay with it. But until he fights those two fighters, fighting anyone else is irrelevant to me, and he's a paperweight champion to me. That's all he is. He's just paper champion because they making him paper champion. Until he proves to me he can beat Herrera, who handed him his first loss, and then prove to me he can beat Peterson, who handed him his second loss. I know the records don't show it. Who handed him his second loss? Then I can accept him fighting a Manny, fighting a Floyd, fighting someone of that caliber. But until then, Al Heyman handed him these championships. That's all he did.
Somebody is cooking this morning, Sports City. Somebody is definitely cooking. I'm ready. They love me. This is the first dish. Call the number 917-889-9592. I try to give y'all a little teaser, Sports City, what's coming up soon in Sports City. I got boxing on the horizon. You got my co-host to let you know what's going on. He's hot. I like it. Okay, so let me get into
fairness, I was just going to say, in fairness, though, to what Nacho's saying, and like I said, I'm not as big as you guys, but I believe three of Garcia's last four fights he's won by split decision, meaning that there was at least one judge that felt the other fighter won. So, I mean, he has not been winning in convincing style like he has in the past. So I understand where he's coming from, and if Garcia wants to really be considered a champ, he definitely needs to step his game up. You know, it's one thing to have quality wins against guys, you know, 3 years ago, but, you know, you got to stay relevant and current.
Yeah, Brian, someone's going to be listening, Brian, and go, but what about that TKO against Rod Salka his last fight before Peterson, and you just say, well, that's Rod Salka. I mean, come on. You're right. Just to sit here and say that he deserves to fight Manny and Floyd right now, especially and you went further than I do, but I do two out of the last three, Herrera and Peterson, you know, and I don't even count Salka. So those two fighters he lost to, until you fight those two, you're not going to prove anything to me. And you're right. He's losing fights. And he needs to prove it. He needs to prove he's better than – he needs to prove he's as good as he once was, you know, the knockout of Khan and things like that. He needs to go back to that, Danny. And right now, like you said, he's losing that stamina towards the end of fights. And like you said, there's just something in that guy's mind towards the end. He just didn't look like himself.
There was a song made by a football player named Deion Sanders, and it went – must be the money. It must be the money. That's all I can think of. Now, the crazy thing about it, I give him credit in the Matisse fight because he dismantled Matisse. He made Zan bad in Brooklyn, in his backyard. He took care of him in Brooklyn. It was something about Garcia while he fought in the Barclays. He brought it to that crowd. But last night was not impressive, at least to me. And I'm a Garcia fan. I'm not even going to lie. I support Danny. I speak to him. I think he literally has to show the people that he could take care of Peterson and be able to deal with the jab. And then just like Brian hit on, show that he has stamina at least past round seven. Once round seven came, Peterson was walking to Garcia, and Garcia was backing away from him because he did not know what to do in this portion of the fight. This is very interesting, Danny, because I don't like to talk about people I like this. I don't. That's why I don't like to talk about any of my boys, whether it's Thunder, y'all know me. I stay away from my boys. Lions, everybody, y'all don't get dishes. But people force me to do it, and I had to. I had to because I knew Nacho would be around. Just so I can get y'all a glimpse of what we got on the horizon. So now, let me get away from this first dish. Very interesting stuff. I'm actually pumped up. Like, my blood is rubbing like the fight on right now. Okay, so interesting enough, I want to see how you guys feel. Brian, I'm going to throw a dish at you. The Johnny Football situation, he just got released from rehab. Now, one, do you think that he's righted his wrong, or do you think this is something that we'll have to wait to see while he goes through training camp, so on and so forth, in preseason? Or two, do you think this is a situation where he's still young, he's getting a breath of fresh air and can go back to his old ways? And three, do you think he could be the face of this Cleveland Brown team outside of this situation of him being in such a clouded past, if you will?
Well, just like with any situation, Ty, the first step in any situation is, you know, in fixing any kind of problem is first identifying there was a problem. And that was really square or step one for Johnny. You know, he came into the league. Everybody knew that he was kind of a partier from College Station. Everybody knew that, you know, he wanted, I just want to hang out with my boys and I just want to do this. He had, you know, the Rob Gronkowski, you know, Rob Gronkowski mentality a little bit. And I think this is good for him. I really do. I'm going to give you two reasons why I think this is good. I think Johnny checking into rehab to get himself sober and clean, A, whether it was self-imposed or somebody close to him said to do it, he wasn't sanctioned by the league to do it. He didn't get in trouble. He just did it because he knew it needed to be done. But I think it's good, guys, because number one, you know, it makes you realize that he does care, which I think is important, you know, and the fact that you've had all this, you know, all these people talk about Cleveland willing to take a quarterback if there's one available at 12, or they may trade up for one. you know, there's a lot of speculation and talk about that. So that, you know, that's got to be playing into this as well. A little pressure is never a bad thing. And number two, I'm just going to say this right now, and this is probably going to shock a lot of people. I think Johnny Manziel is a better quarterback, a better pure quarterback than either Mariota or Jameis Winston. That's what I think. Period. Period.
Really?
I watch a lot of college football tape. I watch a lot of the intangible stuff on and off the field. Because you got to be able, you got to be able to do it on and off the field, and if you want to morph Mariota and Winston together to make one guy, okay, you take the best traits from each guy, and maybe you could make a better quarterback. But when you're just strictly comparing them apples to apples, straight across the board, Manziel's got a better arm than the other two quarterbacks. Not even a question. He's got more collegiate starts, you know, than the other ones. He played in the SEC. He's more mobile than both of those guys. Well, maybe not Mariota, but he's definitely
more mobile than Yeah, I was about to say, he doesn't have more starts than Mariota.
No.
He doesn't.
Yeah, right. But I like Mariota. Not giving him a hard time, but also Mariota's, unless he goes to Philly, we all know that style offense, it doesn't fly in the NFL. So the problem is you've got a quarterback that in his entire life has never called a play inside a huddle, a quarterback that has never taken a snap under center, a quarterback that, yeah, the zone read option is still alive and well, but as you guys seen from San Francisco and Washington and Seattle, it's being dialed back because people realize, hey, you know what, I don't know if I want to subject my quarterback to being hit by 350-pound offensive linemen. So, you know, all I'm saying is when you just look at what they can do on the field, I'm just telling you right now, I'm not saying what would happen 10 years from now. I think it would be a mistake for Cleveland to draft a quarterback because if they really make it an open competition, and let's say they got a Marcus Mariota, I think Johnny Manziel would win the starting quarterback job. I mean, that I'm just being honest. I'm not saying what they'll be 10 years from now because I know Mariota is a very good student of the game. But I think Johnny Manziel is further along in the process, and they just invested a first-round pick in this guy last year. I think they need to figure out what they have here in Manziel. Hoyer's now gone. There's less pressure there. Nobody's expecting anything from Johnny this year, which so the expectation factor is different from last year. I hope the kid succeeds. I really do. I think there's certain guys that I just root for more than other people. And as you know, Ty, Tim Tebow was one of those guys, not because I thought he was the best football player or not because I thought he was the best quarterback. I just thought he was a player. He would step up in the biggest moments. And I kind of feel like that about Johnny Manziel. I'm not saying he's the best quarterback, but I think he's one of those guys that are clutch, somebody that will make a play when it needs to be made. And I don't know yet if those other guys are, because the one knock on Mariota, if you watch the tape, go back and watch when Oregon played Ohio State. Go back and watch when Oregon played FSU. Go back and watch when, you know, Oregon played Arizona State in the Pac-12 championship game. Marcus Mariota's worst games are when he plays elite competition. And that's not a great trait as a quarterback. So, you know, there is some concerns there. You want your quarterback to play big in the big moment against the best competition. And Mariota has struggled a little bit against the top guys.
Okay. Well, listen. I didn't think that this was going to get this Lotus for the city. So my dishes have been coming out pretty healthy in the kitchen. So Brian actually puts a whole new stir into this Manziel situation, which I can't wait to address also. But it's going to get interesting here. Nacho, your thoughts on what Brian has also said outside of the situation with Manziel just being discharged out of rehab. Do you agree, disagree? Manziel being a better quarterback than Mariota and Jameis altogether, and also the situation that I threw up, him being the face of Cleveland, if he's actually really rehabilitated coming out of the situation, or do you still think that he has that party lifestyle to him? Your thoughts, all in all, Brian has actually made this dish healthy right now.
You know, when Johnny Manziel went into rehab, his statement was to be a better family member, a better friend, and a better teammate. Not once in there did I hear, I need to stop partying, I need to get to work, I need to not drink as much, I need to get away from the friends that are bad for me. All he said was, I need to be a better friend, family, and that's great. That's all political. He did this as a PR stunt. He did this so people can think that he's okay, he's not drinking anymore, he's doing a good thing, and, you know, he was able to get visitors, he was able to leave, he was able to get calls. His friends were able to write him if the person in charge thought that friend was a bad influence. They was able to write him, and they could vet those letters. So this was all a PR stunt. This was just the Manziel camp trying to get a hold of a situation where he was replacing a quarterback that was winning to go to losing, and he was just trying to make it a better situation. Well, it just stinks for him because he's not a good quarterback. He's not going to be a good quarterback in this league. Is he better than Winston and Mariota? Maybe. I haven't seen them play in an NFL game. I've seen him take over a team that was in the middle of a playoff hunt and lose three straight. So I don't know what the hell is going on with the Cleveland Browns in general. That front office is dumb. I think they will use their two picks, trade up, get a quarterback, have another cool battle. They are on HBO. What's the coolest thing other than Johnny Manziel and Marcus Mariota battling it out on HBO for the starting quarterback position for the Cleveland Browns? That's ratings there. This is all ratings. The Cleveland Browns don't give a shit about W's, excuse my language. They don't care about winning. They don't care about division titles. They play in a division where the Browns, the Ravens, or where the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Steelers own that division. And that's sad because that's the three other teams in your division. In other divisions, it's one or two teams, maybe with the exception of the NFC West this year, but you know, they are the lone team in that division that doesn't give a shit about winning it, about winning a championship, about winning anything. They want to get ratings, they want to sell jerseys, and they want to put butts in the seats. So the Manziel stunt going to rehab, them having two first-round picks, it sets everything up for HBO to have the ratings of a lifetime. I'm the biggest Game of Thrones fan. Game of Thrones is tonight. NFL HBO with Cleveland Browns will beat out the ratings for Game of Thrones if Marcus Mariota and Johnny Manziel are fighting for the starting quarterback position. And you know, I love Mike Khaleesi, but I'm still going to watch Marcus Mariota and Johnny Manziel just as much as I want to watch that. So it's all it is. It's ratings, and it's sad. And it'd be sad if I was a Cleveland Browns fan. I'm sad for that organization as a whole. They're going down. They're going down fast, and it just stinks. It stinks to high heaven, and I'm sorry. They lost the team years and years ago. They got a new one, and this is what they got, and it's really sad. And I just hope that they can change and do better soon. But it's really sad for these Cleveland Browns.
Wow. It is heating up in this doggone kitchen. I love it. I love every last bit of it. And just to spice your dish up a little bit, Nacho, just to spice it up a little bit, I still can't get past the situation that the owner of the Cleveland Browns is a diehard Steelers fan. I still can't get it. In part two, look, like I wouldn't go out there to be like, some of y'all sit out for $100,000 each. Like, you're right. We play the Steelers today. Everybody, I'll be on the sideline, and I got a hamstring pull or something. Listen, that's how I feel. And secondly, with the Manziel situation, going up against these boys coming out of college, being a better quarterback than Brian, actually brought a blazing dish. I love every last bit of it. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to throw my personal opinion to this. I think out of all three of them, Jameis Winston is the better quarterback. I'm sorry. If we're talking about arms and who can throw the furthest ball, then I probably give Mariota or Johnny Football the nod. But as in intangibles of being on the field and being able to lead, that's what I'm looking for, a leader. I want somebody. There was an interesting thing that I heard, and I hate it. I love all sports. Gino Auriemma, if you don't know who Gino Auriemma is, I'm a Connecticut guy, even though I don't like the Connecticut Huskies and women or men, but Gino is like the god right now of women's college basketball. They said, what do you do when the girls get in the huddle? You know, and he said it's something about the girl, Jefferson. He was like, I don't care if she's a sophomore. She better be in there and she better be leading everybody in there. If she wasn't the only one speaking in that huddle, then she doesn't need to run my team. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I kind of look at the leadership quality where Jameis has won a national championship in his freshman season, and even though he got knocked off up against Oregon, but he had a 27-game winning streak coming in from his first day on campus in Tallahassee until Oregon ended up knocking him off. So I know everybody's going to come at him with their A game, but I think within a 25-yard, like I think from the line of scrimmage, 25 yards downfield, I think Jameis could do it all, move the chains, and if he has to scramble, he's not as fast as Mariota, or I don't think he's as fast as Johnny Football either, but I think he'll have the right mindset to make that judgment and pick up yardage how he needs to. So that's how I feel out of all three of them, even though Mariota is very impressive to me, especially with his speed. I love speed, so I like his speed on the field, but this is where I question Mariota at the end of the day. When he played LSU 3 years ago, they shut him completely down. When he played Alabama, they shut him completely down. When he played Ohio State just this past January, they shut him down. So he's seen pro-style defenses that have given him quite a bit of trouble while he was in college. So him coming to the pros, he's going to see that every doggone week. It's not going to be like he's playing Pac-12 football and we're just going to go out here and score 80 points. It is not a basketball game. It's a football game. So this is where I question Mariota at the end of the day. Johnny Manziel situation, this is where I don't feel it was fair, and I wish Hoyer was still there, and I give my big brother Chandler a ton of credit on this one. Hoyer should have still been running that show. And every doggone week when I talk to Chandler outside of the show, I'm like, Hoyer better not leave. Chandler be like, all right, he out of there. Believe it, they're going to move him. So I'm like, he's not going nowhere. And sure enough, Cleveland dog, not only did they move him, just like Nacho said, they put him on the bench to watch Johnny Manziel sink the ship while these guys were in a playoff contention. I don't want to say that they were going to get into the playoffs, even though I think they were making good strides to get there. But very questionable situation for them to go with Johnny Football in that significant time. And I think they want to get his feet wet, especially at the stronghold point of the NFL season, to see how productive he can be for a Cleveland Browns team. But I don't think that this is the guy that they hand the keys to right now with them coming out of rehab and potentially, like they're saying, they might go after a quarterback. I just feel like there's a lot of issues right now with this Cleveland Browns team. And I could actually probably agree with Nacho. This could be something that could heighten a situation on HBO, get more people to follow the Cleveland Browns, bring more money to the organization. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we were talking boxing. Deion Sanders said, it must be the money. It must be the money. Okay, so they must be smelling what I got going on in the kitchen. I got this kitchen heating up. I got people here by the wayside. Yes, sir, before I get to them. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and real quick, I know I answered the Browns question and Johnny Manziel. And as it pertains to Brian and saying that Johnny Manziel will be better next year, I believe he's correct. And I don't believe that it's talent. I do believe he's a little bit more talented than those two quarterbacks. But I believe that talent-wise, they're almost on a level playing field to me. But I think the thing is next year, going into next year, Johnny Manziel's seen NFL speed. Johnny Manziel's been in there. He knows what's coming. Whether or not it's 3 games, 4 games, 2 games, he's seen it. And he knows what to expect. These two don't know what's going on. You could have played Alabama 13 times last year. You still have no idea what NFL speed is. So coming into the league next year, Mariota and Winston are going to be in for it. And if we're talking top five, they're going to be in for it on a shitty team. So they're going to have to figure out NFL speed real fast. So I do give the edge to Johnny Manziel going into next year. But coming out of college directly, I believe they're all on an even playing field. I don't give any one of them the edge. Maybe the other two over Mariota, just like you said, it's not a basketball game. You're playing 5 to 8 yards behind your center for 60 to 80 plays a game to scoring 80 points. You're not even going to see that many times on the field, your first 4 games in the NFL. So it's just going to be ridiculous how much Mariota is going to have to adjust. But coming into this league, I really do think they're almost all on the same playing field. I think it's going to be up to their mind and their heart, and I hate to get all mushy or whatever, but I think that's what it comes down to. Which one of these guys can handle this NFL game in that room, and in that locker room? And in that room, I mean the film room. In that film room can handle it, and in the locker room can handle it. Be a leader of men, like you were saying. Which one of these three men can do that, I think, is going to be the one. Because talent-wise on the field, I think they can do this on the NFL level. I really do. I think all three of them have the skill and the talent to play NFL ball for a long time. It's whoever's got the mindset to be in that film room and get this game, get it down and understand this game, and then, like I said, to have the heart to be a leader in that locker room. And we're not going to be able to see that just looking at their stats and seeing what they do at the combine and pro days.
Now, and interesting enough, like I said, I got some boys, well, no, I can't call them that. I got some chefs here at the door that I got to get them in here. But the one thing I look at with Johnny Football is he had some preseason, and he had, what, 2 or 3 starts, and that was it. So I think depending on how the quarterback dilemma goes down in Cleveland, if they do give him the keys of Ferrari to try and run this high-speed car, if you will, around the NFL, then so be it. But I think that This is going to be interesting to see how it does pan out on which quarterback is better. But to me, for my money, I think Jameis is the better one. However, there are a lot of people now actually speaking on behalf of Jameis not being ready for the NFL off of the field, with him actually having to be responsible for himself, because it's not going to be coaches and coordinators being able to put their arm around you and be like, calm down and make sure you don't do this, that, or the third. This is literally Winston representing Winston at the end of the day. So I think that's the big, checkpoint that everybody's worried about with him. Mariota and Winston, I still think, have more availability to end up starting more games than Manziel, depending on if they literally are going to go with Manziel to be the quarterback. But I still think if Manziel ends up being the quarterback in the AFC North, that could be a problem, because he's going up against tough defenses, regardless if Baltimore is counted down the chink and if Pittsburgh has lost some players. I still think he still has to worry about all three of those defenses 6 games throughout the season. Okay, so let me get into this dog walk kitchen, because I'm telling you, they were here waiting, hands up, ready to go. I had one of them jump in and jump out. Aaron, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Yo, man, it's such a pleasure to be here with you all on another edition of Brunch, and I come in and we're talking AS. Oh, God is good. God bless America. Let's go. Let's go.
Hey, Aaron. Hey, or serious, you know, I wasn't able to catch the Friday episode, but I heard you, and later on I got some for you. I got some.
Hit me.
No, we got to get into this Manziel question to you. But after we done with this, I got some for you.
That'll work.
Okay, so from what you heard, you got somebody behind you too. I want to hear how he feels about the situation. You missed a good bit of this. I don't know how much he caught of it. Brian actually threw out the fact that he thinks that Manziel is a better quarterback, I guess, at this point, case now, or I don't know if it's career-wise, that Manziel is going to be a better quarterback or at this current time better than Winston and Mariota. Your thoughts? He just got discharged out of rehab. Do you think that he's rehabilitated? Do you think that he's ready to lead this Cleveland Browns team? And you being an AFC North guy, this is actually right in your wheelhouse. Your thoughts? And you do have somebody behind you that is ready to go.
You know, honestly, man, time will only tell, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, I wasn't a big Johnny Manziel supporter before he, you know, came into the league, and I'm not one now, especially since he's playing with the Cleveland Clowns. So, you know, I'm not going to, you know, throw stones at the man right now. You know, he evidently, you know, had a battle with, you know, alcohol and things of that nature, what he'll get himself out. So let's see what happens. You know, I agree with what Chairman was saying all last year, and again, Todd, you and I and the rest of the chefs are sitting here and said that when they pulled Brian Hoyer, you know, that's when the keys, or that's when the ship went down. So I'm not too sure about that. You know, as far as what Brian had to say about, you know, him being the better quarterback out of the other two, or I'm not too sure if that was the exact phrase, but I'm just going to address that because that's how I heard it. I don't know about that. I really don't. You know, you're talking about an undersized guy who was coming in with 50, you know, pounds of baggage on him, playing for an organization who has routinely crucified and killed quarterbacks. You know, if Johnny Manziel does not start week one this upcoming season, the Cleveland Browns are going to trot out their, like, 20th starting quarterback in 19 seasons. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I'm not too sure, you know, where Brian, you know, threw that information from. Now, Johnny Manziel was to get shipped to another organization, you know, with the good pieces that are put around him in another franchise that will help him flourish, i.e. a Russell Wilson, i.e. a Drew Brees, who are, you know, about that same size and have somewhat similar skill set when you talk about a Russell Wilson who can maneuver around in the pocket and make things happen, you know, then maybe I can jump on that and agree with that. But with Johnny Manziel in Cleveland, there ain't no way on God's green earth that he's going to ever succeed and reach that level of stardom that, you know, is needed to play in that division as well as play quarterback in this league. As far as for the other two, I popped in and Nacho was talking about, you know, the Cleveland Browns selecting a Marcus Mariota and having a quarterback controversy and a quarterback battle for Hard Knocks. I didn't believe it until he just said it. I really wasn't buying it, you know, but the more and more I sit down and think about it, and the more and more, you know, I sit there and contemplate what my man Nacho says, that makes tons of sense, honestly. You know, you want to put butts in the seat. Obviously, you're not going to win a football game, so why not make a couple, you know, extra, you know, change on the side and, you know, get ratings and, you know, sell jerseys and this, that, and the third. So that makes the most sense, you know, if Winston falls to him, I doubt Winston gets past, you know, one or two. But if Winston falls to him, you know, why not try to, you know, put butts in the seat to see, you know, this freak show of a circus going on. So it's going to be interesting to see what pans out. But, again, I don't subscribe to that, you know, Manziel is going to be the better quarterback of the two. I think when it's all said and done, I think Marcus Mariota, just because he's going to be in a better situation than the other two.
Hey, Ty.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to address the point, and Nacho hit it on the head, but once again, I didn't say the career trajectory. I didn't say, you know, when it's all done, who's going to be the best guy. What I said is next year for the Cleveland Browns, that Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, the lack of experience makes Johnny Manziel the best option, essentially. I'm not a big Johnny Manziel fan. I had him rated like fourth or fifth last year as far as the quarterbacks coming out, and I thought he got drafted about where he should have. I think, you know, Bridgewater, Bortles, Carr, all better quarterbacks, strong arm guys. under center, taking snaps under center. So I just want to point out once again, my thought process here is this, guys. You know, we continually see teams every year make some, you know, bonehead decisions, and then 3 years from now, they wonder, you know, like, well, why can't we ever compete? Why can't we ever, you know, why can't we ever be an elite team? Well, how about the fact that you had two picks in the top 20 and you traded both of them up to get a quarterback a year after you selected a quarterback in the first round? I'm just saying, if you want to be a team that's continually bad, go ahead and draft a quarterback. That's all I'm saying. You know what? Manziel started two games. Right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you think he's going to be the, you know, the second coming of Joe Montana, you know, or Fran Tarkington, you know, for the smaller QBs, or if you think he's going to be a complete bust, you know, like Akili Smith, you know, the problem with that logic is he's played two games, you know, and granted he was horrific in both of those, but I feel like a first-round pick, the 21st overall pick, is worth more of an investment than two games. Unfortunately, you drafted him with a lot of the baggage that he has right now, knowing he was a party guy, knowing that you know he liked the glamour and the lights that went into the evaluation. So my point is, to me, it would just be utterly ridiculous and stupid to turn around and draft another quarterback this year. I don't care if Marcus Mariota fell to 12. I don't care if Jameis Winston was there at 12. It's still incredibly stupid. You know what? The Cleveland Browns have more holes to fill than quarterback. And I understand if you ain't got a quarterback, yada, yada, yada. But the bottom line is they should feel like they have their quarterback. They just drafted a guy last year. This is an incredibly deep draft along the offensive and defensive line, an incredibly deep draft at the wide receiver position. And if you really want to start talking about where Cleveland has issues, we can start there because their best receiver can't seem to stay on the field. They got way too many holes to be looking at a starting quarterback.
Okay, well, we still got people here. Chandler, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning? Epic show going on. I only got two dishes out, and everything has been so flavorful in the kitchen. How are you feeling this morning? And what's your thoughts on what you heard thus far from the Manziel chatter?
Good morning, everybody. Sorry I'm late. Wow. I think it's funny in many ways. You got players on his own team screaming about, you know, they're not sure about him and this and that, but these same players never have anything negative to say about Josh Gordon, who was torpedoed two seasons, by the way. Now you got the Marcus Mariota thing, and let me just say this about as far as next season. Johnny Manziel will be playing for another offensive coordinator and an assistant that still does not fit him. By the way, that still does not fit him. So that doesn't give him any advantage because he has to learn a new system and he couldn't learn the last system. So there's no advantage for him next season. Game speed or not, he's learning another system which he doesn't know and he still doesn't know how to take the ball from under center. So that negates any sort of game speed advantage because he's learning again if he gets enough rep, which he didn't get last year. You know, and he's still not going to be in a system that fits him and still playing for a coach that didn't want him. That's where he loses all of his advantages. He's playing for a coach that doesn't want him there. Mike Pettin did not want Johnny Manziel, still doesn't want Johnny Manziel. The owner of the Cleveland Browns does not care about winning. I don't know why people keep forgetting this. He doesn't care. So it makes perfect sense to draft a quarterback if Jameis is there. And Jameis will be there, not Marcus, because Marcus is going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay? Marcus Mariota is going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Jameis is the one that will be there at 2. And if you don't think the Cleveland Browns would trade both of those picks to get Jameis Winston so they can be on Hard Knocks and everybody buying jerseys and talking about Manziel versus Winston, you haven't been watching the Cleveland Browns for the past 2 years. You know, and Manziel with the rehab thing, anybody that's been in rehab knows the hardest thing about rehab is actually when you leave, because you don't have the 24-hour support. You don't have the people to talk to. You don't have the groups and everything constantly to help you. Now it's you on your own, and that is the most difficult part. So that, again, will take away from his focus and his ability to play football, because now he's got to get used to doing it on his own. You know, and that's real hard, especially that first 90 days when you're out, which takes him right into, what, OTAs and everything else, which means his focus will be split so he can't learn. I don't think there's any advantage for any of them. I think Jameis is the most pro-ready. And I think Jameis is going to wind up going to a team that really has a lot of pieces, because someone's trading up to get Jameis, right? The Tennessee Titans are going to have a haul at that number two pick, and then I draft a quarterback. They're going to trade out, because that's the smart thing to do. As you said, as Brian said about Cleveland, Tennessee has holes to fill as well. How do you fill those holes? With a bunch of draft picks in the first and second rounds. That's the smart thing to do. But Manziel has no advantage over either one of them, because he's still in a situation that doesn't fit him. He's still in a situation where he has to learn something totally new. So having seen game speed for two games, doesn't, I don't see where it helps at all, personally.
Okay. Anything that you guys would like to address before we get away from this? Because I'm telling you, there is a healthy helping right now with these two jumping off, but the Manziel situation is definitely considerable.
You know, I'm going to say this, you know, and again, you know, it's good to see my man Chandler in the building this morning. And I thought I was the only one I was talking to the park. But anyway, I really what he had to say there. I really do. You know, again, I said this when I initially spoke. You know, the Cleveland Browns really don't care about winning ball games, which is fine for me. It's still a fan. But, you know, if Johnny Manziel does not start again, they're going to have their, you know, I think it's the 17th, 18th quarterback under center, you know, to start opening week, man, you know. And it's crazy to sit there and think about it. You know, again, there are more holes to fill on Cleveland's roster. However, I have a hard time believing that, again, Chandler hit the nail on the head, that if Jameis Winston, you know, or let's say for kicks and giggles, you know, Mariota is still there, but they're not going to trade up to go grab this guy. I really don't. You know, I mean, I sat there and watched it several other times, you know, but it's crazy to sit there and talk about it, but, you know, it is what it is.
Okay, Brian or Nacho, anything left on that, or we're good?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, the only thing I'll say is I understand where Chandler's coming from, and I agree. And learning the new offensive scheme completely 100% makes sense. The advantage is still there, though, when you consider that he still played with these players. Game speed does matter. Timing, route running, all that kind of stuff does matter. He did play with these guys. He did play with this group of wide receivers. He's went through an NFL training camp, which is something that the other two have not. Now, if they draft a quarterback, I'm not a Cleveland Browns fan, so maybe it's a little different for me, but I got to tell you, if I'm a hardcore Cleveland Browns fan and they draft a quarterback, I'm changing teams. I'm getting, you know what, stop this. Go back to the original Cleveland Browns. You know what I mean? Switch to the division rival. Go back to the original Cleveland Browns. Because,
Don't do that. Come with Pittsburgh. We got you.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know what, just the ship is sinking, just, you know, go all in on baseball or something. I mean, I don't know. If they draft another quarterback, you know, I mean, shit's going to hit the fan. You know, you may see rioting in Cleveland. I just don't know how you draft quarterbacks in the first round back-to-back. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, because I know we've seen crazier shit happen, but I'm just saying, this is not the Patriots. This is not the Broncos. This is not a cream of the crop that has the luxury to waste picks, if you will. And with this being such a deep draft among the offensive and defensive line and the wide receiver positions they really need, I'll be absolutely blown away if they draft a quarterback in the first round.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's get rolling. The next topic I have out here, Chandler, I guess you came at the right time for this situation. I guess this is a perfect fit dish for you. Guess who met up with Gang Green yesterday? And I don't know if they are going to do it, but your thoughts on the Jets hosting Jameis Winston. And interestingly enough, do you think he'll fit the mold of Todd Bowles, knowing how Todd Bowles has gone from, you know, interesting quarterback after interesting quarterback out there in Arizona, and now basically being given the keys to this Jets organization? Do you think, one, that these guys can actually coexist, and two, do you think Jameis Winston and his personality aura is ready for New York City?
Yeah, I think he'd fit fine with the Jets. The problem is the coach. I don't think the Jets have the right coach for Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston needs a coach like Jimbo Fisher, who is going to ride him mercilessly, yell at him, scream at him, look like he's always yelling at him. That's the type of that's the type of discipline Jameis craves. He needs to always know where the line is, and when he steps a toe over, he needs to get slapped back. That's the type of coach he will excel under. I don't know if Todd Bowles is that kind of guy. I'm not going to say he's the reason. I'm going to say I don't know. But team-wise, the Jets are going to be run heavy, run first, run second, play defense, and ask the quarterback to not lose the game. That's a perfect situation for a young quarterback that needs to learn. There's no pressure on him. It's kind of similar to what Pittsburgh did with Ben Roethlisberger his first season. They had everything in place. All they told him to do was not lose the game. That's all he had to do, not lose the game. And he wound up winning the Super Bowl. Not in his first season, obviously, but he wound up winning the Super Bowl playing like that. And then they took the reins off after he learned. I think the Jets will be a perfect fit. I told you, Ty, how many months ago? Off the air, I told you that Jameis Winston was going to the Jets. I told you that. And the reason I said it was the reason I've been saying for the past couple of weeks, I thought the Bucs would draft Mariota. I think Jameis Winston in New York would be a perfect fit. Woody Johnson has enough money to hire the babysitters, watchers, whatever you want to call them, same as Dallas did with Dez Bryant, same some other teams have done with other players. And that has worked in most cases. Even in Dez's case, once he, you know, the couple of things he got into with the mall thing and with his mom thing, it was nothing about him being out in clubs or anything else. James has never been a guy been out in clubs or got in trouble at clubs or anything like that. It's been all things he said, so things he's done on campus. So it was never about him being out in the street. So that's something is even though people are trying to totally blow up the whole off-the-field thing, the off-the-field things were still technically on the field. If you think about it, everything happened on the campus. There's never anything off campus other than the supermarket where they were giving away free food and somebody decided to say something to him when he took food that they'd been given. They've been letting the guys take for years. So I think the Jets, yeah, with a running game, strong defense, good wide receiver, Brandon Marshall to throw to. Are you kidding me? Brandon Marshall to throw to? Yeah, that's a good fit.
Okay, well, let's go around the kitchen and see how everybody else feels about this one. We already got this one spiced up. Nacho, your thoughts on Jameis in front of the Jets organization? They hosted him over the weekend. One, do you think he's a good fit? And two, do you think he's ready for the bright lights of New York City? And believe me, I think Chandler's probably the only one that knows a big deal about the New York media. I think they could chew him up, spit him out, end up stepping on him if he does mess up severely or anywhere near what he's done down there in Tallahassee. But your thoughts?
You know, I think it is a good fit. Chandler's right. If you put him on that team with that defense, the way they played the past couple of years, the way that defense has played out, you know, I think it would be a good fit. And you talk about the big city and the bright lights and all that good stuff. People are going to know him, though. That's the problem. When someone at a craft store doesn't know you because they're new and thinks you're stealing because they don't know you, that's going to be a problem. When you're walking out of somewhere in New York, they're going to know you're Jameis. It's going to be a good deal, and everyone's going to be fine. That's the problem. When you've got big names in small towns, I guess, or whatever, it's not a small town, but when you've got someone going into places and things like that of that nature and towns like that, it figures something bad like that is going to happen. It just so happened to be to the quarterback of the biggest team at the time that was on, I believe, 22, 24 game winning streak, national championship, whatever have you, all the great stuff that they were doing. It just so happened to be him. So, yeah, do I think he can survive? Yeah, I do think he can survive in the big city and the bright lights and what have you. He's got that personality. He's very, very not shy. He's very in front of you, in front of the camera, smiles. He's got very good personable personality. He's very personable on camera. All the coverage I've seen on ESPN and NFL and Network and all the good places, he just seems to be that guy that you want to talk to, you like, you wouldn't mind hanging out with. You know, I always go with something that I heard a long time ago. It's the layover test. Who would you rather sit next to in a layover for the next 6 hours? You know, some guy that's going to be talking about himself and how great he's done in his career and how bad he is, or just some guy that's going to sit there and relax and talk to you and have a good time and make you feel like you're welcome. I think that's Jameis. I think Jameis is that guy who can just, you know, handle anything you throw at him. And anytime they threw any kind of question at him or any kind of salty question or any kind of crab joke or anything like that, he laughed at it. He embraced it. He took it on. He was able to laugh at himself and laugh at the mistake and grow from it and become a better person in my eyes, even though he still made some dumb mistakes after that, being a kid, you know, in the limelight. I just think now he's growing up. He sees the grand stage of it is. He's going to get the talking to by Goodell and the owner of the team he gets chosen by. So I think he'll be okay wherever he goes, especially if he goes to New York in that big city.
Okay. I guess I'll go to Sirius next. Sirius, your thoughts on Jameis, knowing that you watch a fair bit of him, do you think he's ready for the Jets organization? And do you have some question marks about him, or do you think he's ready for this media, whether it be in the Post, the Daily News? I mean, I'm just thinking of the ones that will have him on the front page and literally be ripping him to shreds week by week if he's not successful. And also, do you think he fits the build of a Todd Bowles system where he basically came from a, you know, mild-mannered, no-nonsense type of ordeal out there with the Arizona Cardinals? And, you know, coming up with a rookie coach being alongside a rookie quarterback if this does end up going down.
You know, honestly, man, it's kind of crazy to sit back and think about Jameis Winston in New York, you know, with the Jets. I personally, you know, again, I may be the one minority here. I don't think that they're a good fit. I think, you know, if you're going to throw, you know, anybody to the Jets, you know, and that media and that guy who, you know, you can't really throw crap jokes and stuff that, you know, I think Mariota's, in my opinion, is a better fit. You know, I think, you know, out of the two men, I think that he'll be able to handle the New York media and the situation should, you know, they lose a couple games or he throws a, you know, an interception or across the team the game or whatever. I think, you know, the temperament of both quarterbacks, you know, I think that favors Mariota. On the field, you know, obviously they picked up Brandon Marshall and everything like that, but I honestly think Mariota's a better guy. I really do. You know, no disrespect to, you know, what he was able to, you know, accomplish during his pro days and, you know, him, you know, deflating, you know, deflecting, you know, questions, you know, and this, that, and the third. I mean, at the end of the day, gentlemen, you know, you're going to say whatever you're going to say. You're going to bite whatever bullet you have to bite. You're going to smile, do whatever you have to do to get your job. You know, at the end of the day, this is all this is. It's a glorified job. And, you know, you and I, you know, put on a suit and tie, you know, go in and, you know, shake, you know, employer's hand. These guys stand in front of a microphone, you know, during their pro days and, you know, this, that, and the third. So that's all this is. So I'm not really, you know, getting caught up in the window dressings of it, so to speak, just judging by the players and what I've seen on the field, you know, and how I've seen both men deal with adversity. I honestly think that, you know, Jameis Winston has learned a lot, but I think for New York, Mariota may be the better guy for that.
And it's still a little, you know, jumble, if you will, on who's going to end up being the first pick, because they're actually trying to entice the situation that Jameis will end up going there. There's other networks and media that think that Mariota might end up being the guy down there in Tampa. So I want to see how that first pick ends up going down, and seeing how these guys end up fizzling out throughout the league. Because just like we discussed previously, I want to see how Tennessee ends up going at one of these quarterbacks. If they do end up going quarterback, and if the Jets don't have a pick to go after either Mariota or Winston, if they go after Petty. Petty has been the lost quarterback in this situation that could throw that ball around the field. And just like Chandler said, don't forget the Jets have Brandon Marshall right now. Don't forget that Brandon Marshall is there. So that they will have a big-time receiver there. But the one thing that I do agree with Chandler is if the Jets do get away from running the ball as heavy as they have been over the last couple of years, I want to say more than a couple. I really want to say at least 5 to 6 years since Rex has been there, they've always been run-heavy. If they actually let that ball fly and try to move the ball as best as possible. But this is something that we do have to wait to see paying off for the Jets organization. But the one thing that startled me is the Jets wanting Jameis to come there, or just to even host him, and knowing how big of a deal it was for him to be in the city of Tallahassee, Florida, who is nowhere near as big as a city as New York City, and just knowing how they've dealt with, you know, guys all across the board, from Wayne Gretzky to Derek Jeter to Patrick Ewing. I mean, you name them, you got them. They've all been in this city, and they dealt with their fair share of, you know, rocks being thrown at them. So hopefully if Jameis does get here, if he can withstand the storm of New York City, that's why I'd actually, you know, raise my eyebrow a little bit on if he could handle what can happen in New York City. Okay. Speaking of which, I mean, I got a little bit of basketball. I got baseball, too. I don't know if you guys are into that one. Bri, did I get you on the Jameis situation? No, I didn't. Okay, so, Bri, your thoughts on the Jameis Winston situation. Do you think he's ready for this Jets organization? Your thoughts if he can handle this media? Do you think that he's changed since his first two seasons down there in Florida State? I mean, all in all, I mean, if he does land up landing in gangrene, do you think this is an ideal fit?
All right, well, I think everybody covered the basis, so I'm going to keep my response under 60 seconds and just point out a couple obvious. Number one, I'm not sure why we're talking about this. Didn't the Jets already sign their quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick? Number two, Nacho,
do you believe in Fitzpatrick to run that team?
Not at all, but any jab okay. I can take at Chandler, I'm absolutely doing it. Absolutely.
Okay.
Number two,
okay.
Internship, I've seen that movie too, Nacho. First we're saving lives, and then we're stuck in a blender? What? And
what?
Number three.
What?
Number three, guys, I think this might be a moot point because even if Jameis made it past Tennessee, like let's say they didn't trade the pick, you still got Washington sitting there at five. And remember, they left Robert Griffin completely off the players to look forward to list for 2015, and we all know how Gruden feels about him. So I'm just saying, I think Gruden be licking his chops to get just about any quarterback right now.
Very interesting. And that's one thing I do worry about, is if these two can coexist and get it right and actually put him in a system that helps RG3 prevail. I mean, he was in there his rookie season, the run option worked, and they got to a playoff, and then they rip him from that system, and he looks questionable, to say the least. And he puts himself in danger, too, on the risk that he takes. He doesn't slide, so on and so forth. But I do understand where you're coming from, Bri. If Gruden is put in a situation to go get a quarterback, will he pull the trigger and have more of a quarterback dilemma go down there in Maryland or D.C. area, however you want to call it, because they play Atlanta, Maryland. I've been down there. So if he wants to have that Kirk Cousins situation go on, because I think Kirk Cousins is not ready, the Colt McCoy situation where Colt actually led them to win down there in Dallas, and, you know, they pulled them and got RG3 back in there, and RG3 started losing again. So I don't know if Gruden is actually the guy that needs to be corralling the situation, but he's been given the keys, so somebody has to drive that Lamborghini around that area. Okay, so My next topic be unless anything else that needs to be said about the Jameis Winston ordeal. Okay, the science helps me. Okay, my next topic that I wanted to go to, I don't know if y'all want basketball or baseball. I have a few baseball, I have a few basketball, and we are counting down. Let me know which dish I want to go to first. As a matter of fact, I'll go there. Brian, I'm coming to you the next one. You are in the Los Angeles area. Your thoughts on Kershaw getting rocked, especially, and we got Nacho here too, getting rocked by these Diamondbacks out there in Arizona. Well, mind you.
Peyton?
Excuse me?
You say Peyton?
You said Peyton again. Look, I love it. I love this person. I love what he does this to me. Okay, so Kershaw, you know, if, even though, you know, this is the start of the season, you know a lot of these pitchers probably won't be on their stuff until, you know, I want to say at least the third or fourth week, or fourth start of their rotation, and then they'll probably, you know, start to get their wind under the sails. But he got rocked for a situation of five runs. Your thoughts after the Dodgers just threw this guy a boatload of money. Do you think that this is something that to be concerned about? Do you think this is just early season jitters? Your thoughts on Peyton Kershaw, since I got to get it down like that.
Well, to me, this really isn't a story. I mean, every pitcher at some point in time is going to have a bad outing. I mean, it's just inevitable. Absolutely, did he get hammered? He got absolutely hammered. And when it was going bad, I think it was 5-0. Paul Goldschmidt stepped up and hit a 2-run jack that just absolutely collapsed the roof. He got hammered last night, absolutely. So did the other LA pitcher, Jared Weaver, got rocked against the Kansas City Royals. So my point being is that if you pitch in professional, if you pitch at the MLB level for any period of time, no matter how good or bad the pitcher is, insert your favorite pitcher here, you're going to be able to find a bad game here or there. MLB is all about consistency. We're six games into the season right now for most teams, five for some others. I'm not worried. I'm really not worried because the velocity is there. He still has absolutely filthy stuff. He's still going to win close to 20 games. That division is probably still theirs, as Chandler's going to point out. The Giants won last year, so they're going to be horrible this year. I'm just not that worried.
Okay, now before I pass this around the kitchen, I want you to know this, Brian. You said a game here or there. His last two starts before this was in the postseason, and he got rocked. Both times in the postseason, and he comes back fresh into the start of the season, and it looks like he is on the same steps that he was coming out of October. That's why I threw that out there. If you want to respond, I'll
let you. And I get where you're coming from. I get where you're coming from, Ty, but to me, I look at baseball like two completely separate seasons. You got the regular season, and then you got the postseason. And you're right, he did get absolutely got rocked, but if you go back and watch that game against the Cardinals, it wasn't like this matchup against the Diamondbacks yesterday, in that he was actually dominating. He was actually dominating the Cardinals until I want to say the fifth or sixth inning, and then it just kind of collapsed. The Diamondbacks basically took it to him from the first inning. I want to say they scored in. And I didn't watch the whole game, guys, so I apologize. But I want to say they scored in four of the first five innings against Kershaw yesterday. So that, you know, consistently they were just hitting him. In the postseason, he had actually done pretty well up until a point. And then I want to say they scored like six runs in one inning. Once again, I'm just not concerned. He still has his velocity. The velocity hasn't dropped. He still has his stuff. Now, if we want to get into – you know, clutch pitching and things like that. We've already had this conversation, and you know how I feel about Kershaw. I've already said it. You know, I have a lot of respect for a guy like Madison Bumgarner. But once again, to me, this just isn't that big of a story.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll put him right behind the dish. Chandler, your thoughts on Kershaw and his start up against the Diamondbacks? He basically got shelled, gave up 10 hits, 5 earned. Do you think there's, you know, cause for concern? Do you think it's just early season jitters? And just like I stated before, the reason why I brought it up was because of how he looked in his last two starts in the postseason, and he had, you know, an interesting amount of hits given up as well as the run total as well. Your thoughts on Peyton Kershaw?
Well, it's just that, Peyton Kershaw. I love the way Nacho coined that phrase. Nacho, you need to patent that, by the way. You know, it's his first start. It doesn't matter. I don't care about the first or second starts of any pitcher. I really don't, unless it's a rookie or a guy who hasn't had a lot of success and he starts out himself, because that'll help him build confidence. For an established starter, first couple of starts don't matter. They truly don't. They're stretched. They're still, you know, arms stretched out. They're still figuring out which pitches this season they feel comfortable with, which pitches they might not feel as comfortable with. So they need to work on a little bit more in side sessions. I mean, you know, it is what it is with that. But I mean, the two words I thought you were going to say was going to be Thabo and Sevolosha.
Oh, listen, those are my NBAs. I got stuff. Look. Okay, we'll get there because I don't want to put my brothers up against the wall. Fair enough. Sirius, your thoughts on the Thabo Sevolosha situation with the Hawks? He's now out for the season with a broken fibula. The video leaked. I finally seen the video. And, well, I don't know how people feel about the law enforcement, especially with everything that's going on around America right now. But I think they were trying to corral him. They look like they used excessive force and to actually break the fibula. They used that baton on him. And now the NBA is investigating the New York City Police Department on the matter. Your thoughts on one of their better on-the-ball defenders for the Atlanta Hawks out for their run in this postseason, and Peyton Antis as well was caught up in the ordeal as well. But the Hawks now have issues as a one seed in the Eastern Conference.
You know, I'm going to deal with the Kershaw thing first, and I'm going to come right back to that. You know, again, I'm going to keep my answer short and sweet. You know, Cameron, Brian hit the nail on the head. You know, it's your first start, you know, new season, you know, new jitters. I'm not reading too much into that. You know, talk to me, you know, in May and June, you know, and if he's still getting rocked like that, then we got an issue. The Thabo Sevolosha thing, that big. I honestly think that big. I think, you know, I was kind of holding out hope that he will be able to get back and, you know, help this team make a legitimate, you know, playoff run. You know, when he was in the lineup, again, his defense, you know, speaks for itself. That's his calling card, you know. This dude likes to go up there and strap up and play date. So, unfortunately, you know, with the Atlanta Hawks, you know, trying to make a run now, you know, they have a lot of injuries across the board, you know, that they really need to worry about. You know, Millsap is, you know, battling some things. You have Tom Korver battling some things. You got Horford battling some things. And now you got your defensive stopper, you know, and Thabo Sevolosha being ruled out for the duration of the season, you know. So it's a tough go. It's a real tough go. I didn't think, and again, I said this months ago, I didn't think the Atlanta Hawks were going to come out of the Eastern Conference. I didn't think that. I've always, you know, been, you know, a believer of what Cleveland was able to do, especially when they got their pieces. This just further cements that, you know, for me, that once again, LeBron James is going to find himself in the NBA Finals. If we plan out West, it's anybody's guess. But, you know, again, with Thabo Sevolosha out, you know, I don't see anybody in the Eastern Conference really giving the Cleveland Cavaliers too many problems. Not that they were going to have a problem anyway, but, again, that's just where it is.
Okay, Nacho, I don't know if you've actually seen the footage or heard a big ordeal about what happened with Sevolosha and Peyton Antis outside of the Chris Copeland stabbing in a New York City club. Your thoughts on this Atlanta Hawks situation, as them being a one seed, at least missing one of their players for the duration of this postseason play?
as it pertains to the incident, I read the whole story, the stabbing and the incident, you know, what have you. Things happen, you know, just because the name of the star or the name of the person is bigger than an average person. We just got to see it at the forefront. I'm pretty sure there was multiple stabbings at 4 a.m. at multiple places, not just New York at that time. So just because of the names, we got to see it on the front page news. As it pertains to the arrest and seeing the video and things like that, this needs to stop. That's a bigger issue, another topic for another time as it pertains to the cops and how they handle things, but it needs to stop. As it pertains to the Atlanta Hawks, you know, you guys have hit it on the head. With him in the lineup, I think they were a contender. I think they were better off. I do think that it takes a little bit for them. The first round, obviously, is going to be a test for them. I do think they squeak out of it, but it's going to be something to see if they can, if they can shoot lights out and work it out. Maybe they can win the East, but it's going to be hard to see with them out there with Cleveland and Derrick Rose coming back and things like that. It's going to be hard for them for me to see them win the East without him.
Okay, Brian, your thoughts on the Tabocephalosis situation out here in the wake of all of the violent situation that were happening at the nightclub. I don't know if you caught the video. I know you probably heard about it. Your thoughts about Tabo being out from this Atlanta Hawks team, who's the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
You know, I did, Ty. Thanks, and I did catch the video. I did read, you know, the article, and I've kind of been following this. I get baffled on two different fronts, one by the actual players, and one by the cops, and it bothers me that in this day and age, where the five of us can get on here as equals and talk and speak our mind and not be judged, that we feel like we've made so much progress for equality, both, you know, racially, gender, religiously, being able to respect boundaries, and then you watch that tape and you know what, as the white guy, if you will, on the panel, it's really hard to defend the actions, black, white, yellow, green, of police officers, when they act that way. Now, obviously, any of the clips you watch, we don't get to see the preclude, like what happened, what did he do prior to the event starting? But clearly, he's on the ground and he's not exerting any force. And clearly, two different times, he gets whacked pretty hard with a baton in the leg. And secondly, from a player's perspective, can I just say this? Maybe it's because I'm a dad. Maybe it's because I'm now in my mid-30s. Like, I understand we all want to go out at night, but what the hell are these guys doing out clubbing at 3 o'clock in the goddamn morning? You know what I mean? You got more money. You got enough money. You could do whatever you want. Bring it back to the crib. Have your friends there. Invite a few gals over if that's what you want to do. What are these dudes doing out at 3-4 o'clock in the morning? And if I'm not mistaken, and granted, I know in basketball they play every single night. It's not football or hockey or baseball, but they had a game that following day. You know, I don't know, man. I just feel like, you know, I understand these guys are young and they want to experience life, but I just, like, some of the decisions that are made, you know, it's never okay, obviously, it's never okay for brutality, violence, anything like that. But you just wonder if it was your kid, if you wouldn't say, you know what, the choices you make are going to affect the outcome of the decisions or circumstances that surround your life. And in no way, shape, or form is it Copeland or Tabo's fault that they were stabbed or had a broken leg. But obviously, if they had never put themselves in that position, that wouldn't have happened. And all I would say to them is, you know what, you absolutely are entitled to be able to go out and have fun and do whatever it is that you want to do. But at the same time, you have to also understand there's going to be a lot of people out there that are jealous, mad that you have more success, money, power than they do. And you know what? People have to be more aware and protect themselves. You know, I mean, it's a sad story all the way around because I really like that story of the Atlanta Hawks. But as everybody's already said, Ty, I mean, it's sad, but I don't think they're the same team now. You know, they're not the team that's the number one seed in the East now. You know, they're not that team. They're not that lockdown defense. They're not the chemistry-wise. They're not the same team. And that's what us as NBA fans, we're really the ones, you know, and the Atlanta Hawks faithful and the players on the team, you know, we're the ones that lose out.
Okay. Taylor, last but not least on this one, I mean, you threw this one out there. This will be the last topic for the brunch. Your thoughts on the Tom Cephalosha deal out there in your home city of New York. Do you think this got out of hand? I don't know if you've seen the video of the cop actually wailing that baton on him. But now the NBA is on the deal and investigating the NYPD. So we have a storm out here in the tri-state area.
No, I didn't see the video. I don't have to. I haven't seen it in real life too many times. I said to you.
Well,
I think it was Friday. I said to you that or whenever it was, I said to you before this video even came out, I said the cops were wrong. And guess what? The cops were wrong. Go figure. This is New York and NYPD. I know how they get down. Mm-hmm. As far as the players being out, Chris Copeland was out with his wife. Anybody who's been in a relationship knows every once in a while y'all go out and have one of those nights where you just stay out and hang out. And, you know, you do a couple things and you try to see the sun come up, and it's not something you do all the time. Every once in a while you do it with your significant other. Just because, you know what, you guys don't get to do that very often. When you're in a relationship, you're usually in bed by 9, things like that. Chris Copeland is some kid. He's 28 years old. He was out with his wife. So if he wants to be out with his wife till 4 o'clock in the morning, then he can be out with his wife till 4 o'clock in the morning. This is not a guy who's ever a club guy. This guy was on the Knicks, trust me. He's not a club guy. All right, his name would have been out there. It never was. So this was probably a one-off for him. They were probably out celebrating something. Who knows? You know, it's not about all the decisions they make. Yeah, the guys, by the way, Chris Copeland is the bench player. He probably knew already he wasn't going to play the next day. He probably already talked to the coach and said, hey, coach, listen, I'm going with the white man. I'm going to have some fun. You know, what's going on with the game? And the coach is like, yeah, you're not playing. Go ahead and do your thing. It's towards the end of the season. It is what it is. You know, this is more so about the NYPD. This is more so about the fact that these cops beat up these two dudes because they were big and they looked like they had some money, and they probably stepped up and said, hey, that's our friend. Is he okay? And the cop said, shut up. And the guy said, hey, man, I just asked a question. They decided to beat him up. That's what the NYPD does. And I'm glad that now that there's going to be a huge light shined on that. As far as Atlanta Hawks go, you know what? I think it'll hurt them. I don't think it'll derail them like most people think. I still believe in the Hawks. I've been believing them since before the season started. I think that the team is bigger than one player, and I think they'll have some guys step up. But I'm not going to criticize these guys in any way for being out because, you know what, guys deserve to go out and blow some steam sometimes.
I hear you, man. Like I said, man, it's just funny that, and I hate to kind of be the, I don't want to say like political or, I can't care less how I say it, man. I'm sorry. But in the era of, you know, camera phones and, you know, trying to record this as best as possible, if they are wrong, just like it's been noted in the kitchen right now, please continue to do as much as you can to catch these guys, man, because literally, I mean, as much as they say that they protect the serve, they're getting caught in the wrong in some of these situations, too. So it's always going to be people word against the law at the end of the day. And I just got another link that I actually saw, again, in the state of Oklahoma, another person was shot while they were intending to tase them. I don't know how you confuse a gun from a taser gun. Well, they're both guns, regardless of the situation. But I hate to go down that avenue. That's just my stance on people getting shot or killed or so on and so forth, or beaten wrongfully. You're breaking bones. This guy's a million-dollar athlete. Well, let me get it right. A multi-million-dollar athlete in Tabo Cephalosha. You think the Atlanta Hawks aren't concerned? I'm concerned. I can feel as if we put $2 million into him. I mean, listen, or a couple hundred thousand. Listen, he needs to be at work, especially this is like, you know, month in. Like we have to sell stuff to keep people in the seat down here in Atlanta. So, that's just how I feel about it. I think this Tabo Cephalosha deal, or actually just like I said, is going to shed some light over the NYPD. And also, I remember one, police station or ordeal, they were trying to wear, you know, chest cameras on them so they could actually record what's going on. Why aren't these cops wearing these? Why aren't they recording what they're doing to these people? We have to see actually civilians record this and then, you know, try and pass it off to news networks, so on and so forth. So the Tabo Cephalosha situation, everything that's going on down there in South Carolina, also in Oklahoma, police, y'all already outnumber a lot of these people, like they're not going to respect the law. Even though they may tussle, so on and so forth, you guys got them. You got them. There's no need for brute force at the end of the day. But that's just how I feel, Sports City. That's just how I feel. I got to keep it real on that note. We are at the tail end of the show. I know that I got at least three people here in the kitchen right now that need to promote here in Sports City so they can keep you in tune with what we got going on. I'll start with you first, Chandler, since you are doing double duty today. I love this Sports City. Chandler, give me anything that you like to plug or promote here at the brunch. Thank you for stopping by and eating these dishes with the chefs here at Sports City.
I'm always fun, man. Always good to you know, make Brian look bad. Not so thanks for coming serious. And we got a baseball show today. Ty, you probably get another time because you know I forget everything. But we got the baseball show today. It's gonna be we'll get to talk about the first week and some of the things that are going on. So this afternoon, just be a lookout for the dugout show.
Yes, and it will be on the Twitter page as well as all of the Sports City pages. They will be posted, so stay tuned. I have to get in touch with Mr. Gray to make sure what time specifically you guys are suited to be in this kitchen today. But we have double duty here in the kitchen, Sports City. Like I said, you already got a teaser. I'm going to go to the next guy on how the show began today. Mr. Silva, give him a plug. Close out anything that you like to promote. And giving them a teaser on what we got coming up in Sports City. Talk about the gloves.
You know, at Nacho in the Box, at Nacho in the Box on Twitter. Like he said, preluded August 20. I think we're going to do the 26th. After the brunch, we'll have the mega fight preview. Like he said, we're going to have a boxing show going on. It's going to be amazing. I'm excited for it. Like I've been telling TP off the air, this is going to be the greatest time in boxing. Like I said, I got a little political. I got a little off the rails with Al Haymon and Danny Garcia, but that's a personal issue with those two people. And that thing in particular, like I've said, with his last three fights in Herrera, we're getting off track again. But when I say boxing is going to be amazing, boxing is going to be awesome. It's going to be in your living rooms. CBS, NBC, Spike, True TV, they've all signed big deals with Top Rank Boxing and Al Haymon and Premier Boxing Championships. It's going to be boxing. Going to be in your living room every week. It's going to be amazing. And it's going to be good fights. And it's going to be big fights. And it's going to be fights people want to see. So everyone's going to be enthralled. I think we're going to get the casuals back. We're going to get the enthusiasts back. And they're going to be competing. You know, a lot of people talk about the MMA and this and that and the competition that they have. It's two different sports. It's two different ways of thinking. It's two different ways of getting at each other. It's an octagon in the ring. So there's no comparison when it comes to me. We won't be dogging on them or anything like that. This is strictly boxing, and we just love the sweet science. And like we said, that square circle. Again, to the gloves, the mega fight, that's exactly why I wanted to start this. You know, it took 4, 5, 8 years, I guess, some people think, to get this fight going. But it's going to be amazing. And I'm talking about Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. So it's going to be a great, great, great show. Prelude, we will have exclusive interviews and things like that going on with fighters and things like that. Peter Chocolate Quillen, who just draw with Andy Lee. I expect that we should get an interview with him. I don't know when, but I have talked to him. So we should get that in going. So it'll be pretty legit. It'll be awesome to see this sport grow and grow. So it'll be fun. Definitely just excited to get things going. April 26th.
Sports City, I'm telling you, we are on to something big. I just gave you a teaser on how it's going to go down, and that boy is ready to cook. Last but not least, Mr. Hughes, give him a plug, promo, anything that you like to get out there to the people around this brunch. Thank you for helping us shut down the kitchen on another episode here at the brunch.
Absolutely, Ty. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the player interviews website and the blogs. This coming Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific time, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the NFL Front Office Show. We've only got two more episodes left before the NFL Draft. We're doing our NFL Draft Trivia game this week, so definitely stop by. Also, we have a special guest stopping by, a former Baltimore Ravens scout, current director of college scouting for Sporting News, stopping by. So I definitely encourage you to submit any questions you may have to the SportsCityChef at Gmail email address. Be more than happy to try and get in as many of those questions as possible. If you'd like to participate in the game, you can be either in a chat room or you can be online. I want to give a quick shout-out to Sirius, to Nacho, and some of the other chefs who've continued to support us. Numbers have been real strong, guys. And thank you to all the fans who continue to listen to us both on iTunes and live.
Okay, I couldn't say it better myself. TP. He gave you all the plug. Yes, sir.
Sorry to cut you off or anything like that, but I just wanted to say, as it pertains to Brian, that you know, the awesome show. Two more to go. I'll be calling and tuning in. And before you get to, and I know if you're going to get to Chandler and Sirius, but I do have something for Sirius whenever you get to him.
Okay. Sirius just left when you were doing the closeout. So I think he did some slick stuff. Why you were doing your closeout? So I think he was ready. I think he was ready. But if you want to get it out on air, or if you want to catch him on air, we can get you to do that. Or if you want to do it out before we get away from it.
You know what? I'm sure he'll hear the podcast, so I'll throw it out right now. I just want to throw this to him, and I'm just gonna go last names for y'all: Swan, Stallworth, Ham, Woodson, Blunt. I'm talking Mel, Harris, Bradshaw, Lambert, Green, and Hines Ward. Tell me which one he wants to take off to replace Troy Polamalu, and we'll be fine. That's all I was going to ask.
Ooh, he is cooking, people. Recipes all day. I love it. Listen, I'm telling him that, matter of fact, I'm going to post this one on his wall so he gets it specifically to catch the end of the show on this one. Like I said, Brian already gave you all the plug where to catch us at on the website. We have a baseball show that'll be taking off today. I'll be back here tomorrow, Monday night, sport wrapping things up. Back on my job, man. I let y'all down last week, Sports City, but I'm back at it, man. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you, people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, enjoy.